Bree and my show, Bree TV, is now on the After Party every Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. on the B-side. Tune in and call in so we can talk about everything from relationships, religion, politics, sex, travel, or gardening. Remember, Bree TV every Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. on the After Party. See you at the party.
Your mind is my mental thoughts to play. A ghetto sauce you are, and I'll be your sexual chocolate bar. And I gotta keep strong for the cause, and you gotta keep me strong for the tours. Brother, man, and me, damn the family. What else could we be with no one understands us but me? You were the first to change. Big teeth, I'm out.
Hey, thank you for tuning in to Bree TV.
There we go.
Thank you for tuning in to Bree TV. 6 to 8 on the B-side on the After Party. Tonight, we have
our very first Black Men's Roundtable. And I want to kind of set it up for you guys because they were just staring at me because I really didn't have anything necessarily prepared. But there's a reason that I didn't. As I explained to them, I notice when Black men and women get together, and probably men and women in general, but when they get together, if they are dealing with women who have been hurt or damaged emotionally, physically, whatever it may be, I think sometimes they feel blamed or responsible or like, okay, well, I didn't do this. I shouldn't have to deal with it. So I kind of set it up so that there is just, I have four guys in the studio with me. I'm going to introduce them or have them introduce themselves when we come back. But also I have a couple guys that are calling in. But I wanted to leave it open so that they can be in an environment that's comfortable for them so that they can talk about things and not feel like they are being judged or bashed or picked on, because I've been time a man basher and I don't believe it. I don't think it's bashing if it's the truth. But we're going to go ahead and go take a music break and we will be back to start the party.
Like a man, you gotta act like a man. When I get your door, instrumental. Who am I?
Indeed, the Green Eyed Bandit.
Control my career so I can never get stranded. But the rest are getting brand new, being changed up their style from jeans to suits and thinking about a pop record. Something made for the stations, for a whole new relationship of a new type of scene to go platinum and clock mad green, aka a sellout, the rap definition. Get off that boy, change your mission. Come back around the block. Come color me bad to the TikTok. Let them know your logo, not a black thing. My background sing for the crossover. The rap era's out of control, brother selling his soul will go gold. Going, going, gone, another rapper sold. To pop and R&B, not the MD. I'm strictly hip-hop, I stick to kick a free. Funk mode, yeah kid, that's how the squad rolls. I know your head is bobbing, cause the neck no.
Like other rappers,
putting on their fans, they ill, trying to chill. Saying damn, it'll be great to sell a mill. That's when the mind switch to the pop tip.
Kid, you gonna be large.
Yeah, right, that's what the company kicks. Forget the black crowd, you're whack now. In a zoot suit, frontin' black, looking mad foul. I speak for the hardcore,
rough, rugged, and raw.
I'm outta here, catch me chillin' on my next tour. From the U.S. to the White Cliffs of Dover. Strictly underground funk, keep the crossover.
You wanna go pop goes the weasel. You know you should be rocking the fans with something diesel. But you insist to piss me off black, so I flex the bicep so I can push him back. So real hardcore hip hop continue records, and all sucker MCs duck down and get the message. So brand a crossover, yo, who's with me?
His squad.
Another mega blast, funky dope style from Cross Yonder.
So help me wander, help me wander.
From what? The crossover here, crossing you over. Out of here, gone, peace,
see
nice,
ya.
Pinocchio. What a way to go out, no clouds, what the fans are shout. Cause she got gas, then took the wrong route. Came on the scene, chilling, freaking the funky dope line. But when they finish with you, flatline. Some say there's no business, like show business. But if this the truth, please explain why is this. Rappers been around long, making mad noise, you see. Still I haven't seen one rapper living comfortably. No time to pick and wish on the four-leaf clover. I stick to underground, keep the crossover.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Bree TV. I was talking, sorry. We are in studio. We are doing our first Black Men's Roundtable. So I want to go around and have everyone introduce themselves. First person I want to get on the phone is Ray Bolden. Ray, you there?
Here.
Introduce yourself, sir, and tell us what you do.
My name is Ray Bolden. I'm an entrepreneur, author, and I am retired, so I just kind of kick back and listen to you.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Next, young man.
My name is Al D. I'm currently, my name is Aldrick Mitchum. But I have a show here at the After Party called Straight Talk on Fridays from 6 to 8. I am an electrician. I have my own company. My idea or my goal tonight is to, I guess, express the different concepts, because I see we have different men from different backgrounds and age barriers that to get an understanding. So maybe, like you say, because I do believe 80%, if you fix the black man, I do truly believe that everything will follow.
Absolutely.
Will follow. It'll get fixed. I do believe
that. How old are you, sir?
I'm 46.
Mr. Bolden, give me your age, please.
Yes. I'm 51.
Okay. Next up.
Hi, my name is Anthony. 48.
That's a lie. Why you have to think about it?
Because it's true.
Okay.
I'm an entrepreneur. I have my own marketing company.
basically have a banking background. So I guess my goal tonight is just to have a free dialogue and to try to put, you know, I guess a positive message out into the universe, try to help.
Here, and let me say this. Let me interrupt you and not to tell you so much what to do. I get what you're saying. I don't think it necessarily all has to be good or positive in the beginning. I think you have to say what you have to say.
Well,
And I know what you meant.
Right.
And I'm not telling you not to. But what I'm saying is I really want this to be some place where you guys can come and say, okay, you know what? Well, this happened and I felt this way. And if it's something that traditionally you don't feel comfortable saying, I really do want you all to be able to say that.
Well, and I guess to maybe clarify my stance, I think that this is a unique forum. And I think that anything that comes from it, hopefully, you know, it's a positive message to try to, you know, enhance, to encourage, to
absolutely
to bring that up. So whatever the truth is
absolutely
it is. And so we're not here to hurt feelings. It's not an emotional thing. Now we may get emotional or passionate, but you know, it's not bashing. It's a positive message. And so that's my objective, is to not to debate, but have a dialogue.
Good. I'll take that. I don't even mind a good healthy debate.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Great day, great people. My name is Mike Matthews. I go by my alias, Bravo, CEO of Bravo Fit. Newly into the entrepreneurship. I used to be an engineer, but chasing my passion about fitness. Basically, I am here for to kind of find the root cause of like the insecurities of black men and just moving forward with that.
Okay. And Victor, before you say anything, I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys now we're going to have to do another show.
Okay.
This is not something, I don't think it can be fixed in an hour and a half or 2 hours. I just don't. And basically what he's saying, there's so many different avenues that we need to walk down to really get it done, to drill down into things and to make a difference. This will be part one of this show. I don't know if it's part one or part two or part one or part 15, but this is just part one. Mr. Victor.
Hi, I'm Victor McLaughlin, best-selling author in 14 books and 3 films. I talk about the human condition, the African-American condition. Most of my stories revolve around, you know, guy finds girl, loses girl, what does he have to do to get it back, and all of the drama that happens in between.
Okay, thanks. I don't think I got ages.
Oh, I'm newly 30, so I'm new to the 30s club. So that's Bravo. I'm just turned 30.
And Victor just made 50.
Well, my name's Kevin, and I'm 42. I'll be turning 43 next month, and I own a barbershop. I've owned a couple of barbershops. I just have one right now. I'm married, have two kids, grandson, and I have a mentoring program, which is called Barbershop Brotherhood Mentoring Network, where we create relationships to help make a difference in the community. So also I'm a speaker. I speak publicly. I speak behind the pulpit, minister.
Did I get you earlier?
And I have what you mean?
You know what I said. Did I get you earlier? You know what I'm asking you.
Did you get me earlier?
You know what I said. What I told you when I was setting the parameters before we were on the air. You know what I'm talking about.
Was that me?
No, I'm saying, did I get you? Because when I said not overtly religious, basically.
No, and you didn't get me because I'm versatile. You know, okay. I understand. I understand where you're coming from.
I purposely did not ask about religion. I'm gonna bring it back around there, but I purposely didn't ask about religion because I didn't necessarily want to exclude somebody for it. I just didn't want it to be the prevailing conversation.
Well, I see it on all sides of the playing field.
Okay, so we're good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, that's basically what I'm in the field right now, as mentoring young men from the age of 7 to 18, and just go from there.
Okay. Okay. First. first thing I, what we were just talking about, I kind of set parameters. I wanted the guys to feel comfortable. And during the break, we discussed some things that maybe they would want to talk about, what they feel comfortable with, what they think they want to, we're just kind of working through it. And my statement was to them that I think if you fix 80% of what is wrong, if you will, with black men, then you can fix what's wrong with black people. And I think that, if you fix what is wrong, that didn't come out right. If you can fix what is wrong, I'm doing my fingers, with black men, then you can fix 80% of what is wrong with black people. And the reason that I set it up like this is so we can have a dialogue about this. So when I say wrong, you can say what ails black men. Because until we get to a place where black men will openly acknowledge with each other, in relationships with black women, with black children, until they openly acknowledge that there are things that, because of being a black man every day, because of being the child of a black man, whether he was present or not, every day, there are things that affect you negatively. There just are. And I don't think that you guys get a lot of outlets to express those feelings. Mm-hmm. So when you do say them, you know, a lot of times black people, oh, that's gay, or he's a punk, or he's a whatever. I don't feel that way. And if you are gay, I really don't care. And quite frankly, I wanted to have someone that was a gay black man here, but he opted to go to work. Imagine that. But to have that part of it represented also, because there's a lot of different, there's different pieces to this puzzle. Because you can be a gay black man and you can be 22, you can be the straight dude that's 50, you can be single and 40, you can be any number of things, but you guys have a common thread. You all have basically a common experience of being black men.
So I guess I'm kind of confused on the topic. Because
it's whatever you guys want to discuss.
So instead of saying if we fix what's wrong with the black man, I think that what it starts with is if we empower the black man.
I agree. Because it's very impossible.
Because see, the thing about when we start off with the premise of there's something wrong with me,
it needs to be fixed.
It needs to be fixed. But if you start off with the premise of, okay, let me empower you. Because at that point, I think that within all of us is God.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, part of the insecurity, speaking to Bravo's book, I think that part of the insecurity that black men have is we don't know that God is inside of us.
Okay.
And what we've done is...
breaks, and let me tell you why.
Okay.
That's the overly religious thing.
No.
Let me explain why I'm saying this. And there are things wrong with people. There's things wrong. And if you don't acknowledge that it's wrong, it's hard to fix it. And if you empower something that is, it's kind of like, for me, if you empower something that is not right or complete, meaning not so much right as in wrong, but if it's not where it needs to be, you're basically giving energy, electricity, or what have you, to something that is not moving where it needs to go. So for me, when I say, hang on just a second, when I say fix that, I mean, give you all a place to talk about it. And I really don't sugarcoat shit and say, oh, you know what? Everybody should be in power. Everybody shouldn't be in power. Some people are dumb and really don't need it. They just kind of got to figure it out. And I'm not saying black men are dumb. I'm saying just in general, it is not so much about empowering people. You got to break stuff down to me and break it down for people and get them to a good starting point and then build from there.
That's empowerment.
But that's empowerment.
Okay, well, y'all can call it empowerment, and I'm just going to say we're going to fix it.
Okay, I'll tell you what.
And I'm not saying it like it's a bad thing, but that's when I say fix it, I mean fix it.
All right, see, we got real deep real fast, and I don't even know if
that was necessary. Let me say one thing.
Amen.
But let me say one thing, because you said that my point was, I guess, overly religious, and I'll tell you my own personal background.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually anti-religious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in church. And so, and when it comes to religion, and especially when it comes to God, I've evolved to the fact to where now I'm agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for me, I think that part of and it's kind of funny that I kind of got asked to do this. I think that when you say what ails the black man, I think that what we've done is we put our faith in belief systems that have failed us. We've put our faith in an economic system, capitalism, that was not made for us. Capitalism
didn't
was
include
not made,
us.
Did not. It was not made for us. As a matter of fact, it was made to enslave us.
Mm-hmm.
We've put our faith in political systems that have nothing to do with us. And so now we've put ourselves, we've put our faith into career systems that are not for us. Because if two of our white brothers and sisters go into a job and it's me, well, of course they're going to pick them before me. So what we've done is that as black men, we've put our confidence and our faith in these systems that have nothing to do with us, that don't empower us, that don't make us men, that now they basically take and as they used to do in slavery, they take and pit us one against another and having us fight to the death. So my thing is, I think that it starts with the fact of is that we have to now begin to look on the inside of us and have faith in ourselves and our own ability. And then now it comes with empowering us to understand that, okay, if I'm going to fix me, I got to start right down in here.
And you know what I think? I think black men, they need to be able to say, I'm scared.
And I'm all for that.
And for me, that is even, that drills a little bit deeper. Right. I know what you're saying.
Right.
Hop on in here.
Yeah, what should black men be scared of?
Well,
or admit to being
but,
scared.
But I mean, you can be afraid of anything.
We have that it's given to us since birth that we have frailties. We do have those moments where just say for instance a project that we're working on or as in business, you know, you have some fear of that. You know, as far as it coming out to the place.
I mean, fears of vulnerability.
And that's
what I mean. I don't mean necessarily. I mean, yes, you like if you're starting a company, there are always going to be fears that what if this doesn't work out? I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. There are always those types of fears. But I mean, speaking to each person,
it starts. I believe it starts with my opinion. What is the image you see of black men in the social media, the news? We are viewed as so aggressive on TV. We have to be so tough. If you like whine about it, you soft. They call you a punk. I dealt with it growing up in New Orleans. If you don't fight back, like they gonna basically beat you. Can I cuss?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
They basically gonna beat your ass.
Yes, you can.
But who do you have to go to talk about it? I know in my household, I was taught not to cry. Shelby's don't cry in my family. So if I got in a fight, got my ass whooped, it was like you get your ass up and you go back outside and you handle that. And another thing, if you had an issue was dealing with at school, whether you felt like insecure about some things, like I just shaved my head, I was insecure about that, like shit like that. And who do you talk to about that type of stuff?
That's what I'm talking about.
And another thing about I want to piggyback off empowering. I think black men are the most empowered people on the earth, only because black women hold us down more than anybody on the planet, and we don't even support them. So, in my opinion, it's like I think we as black men, we have so much frustration within us. We don't know, like you say, we don't have that release. So my whole release of what I had to develop was going to the gym. That's why I'm so passionate about fitness. And actually trying to get other brothers to kind of get into that as well, because either you're going to do it in the bedroom or in the gym to get it out. And we disrespect.
Or in the streets.
Yeah, in the streets. And I believe that we hurt the people the most that care about us to get that frustration off. And I think it comes from back in the slave days. And so we hurt the black women the most, either disrespecting them or stepping out on them, making them feel less than other nationalities. So that's my view. And it all starts with finding out what yourself, like, what's your insecurities? How can you step up and come to another brother and say, hey, man, I'm dealing with this shit. Like, can we talk about it? But most black men won't, only because we like, if I show this, I'm going to be considered soft. And if you consider soft, especially in New Orleans, we gonna come for you. So it's like if you like, you know, we attack that. So we breed on that shit as we coming up, and we taught that in the hood. So, you know, and a lot of brothers deal with that shit. Manifest more as you go into adulthood, and
Absolutely. It
just, you know, grows.
And that's what I'm talking about, Mr. Bolden. Are you still there?
I'm here, and to jump in here, you know, we seem to have quite a few entrepreneurs and business owners. So in terms of things that may be bothering black men in terms of talking and not only speaking about what's
bothering them and going on in society. We need to actually be talking about things that can empower us in terms of, you know, like I said, we have several business owners here, not only talking about the sports that's going on, the sports scores, the salaries of the players, but how can we build together, you know, and those things will help to empower us as well, you know, so it's a great dialogue that we're having.
Let me just jump in just real fast.
I'm looking at you. Yeah, I mean,
I believe every gentleman, every man that's in this room has a valid point. But what I look at in turn for is trying to empower black men. See, I mean, from what I hear, you know, you guys got your stuff together, you know, and not saying you always have, but sound like that you on the right track. It's a lot of people out here that's not, that don't have that. So a lot of black men that's out here right now are so far in space because there is no leaders. There's none in the household. There's not in the schoolhouse. What the young black men are seeing now are fictitious images of what a black man's supposed to be, besides Barack Obama, to say the least. You know, but we still don't know his pedigree, behind closed doors, because we only know what political, you know, overview, or, you know, what we see. And I do believe that our black women has been put to a test and withstand the test while we sit back and, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, what do we do in the community? What are we doing to address certain issues? You know, barbershops, great. That's the best time to get to know an individual, know what's going on. Not program into their life, but just kind of like, you know, hey, man, what's going on? You know, I already, you play basketball? All right, what's cool? You know, so, hey, man, bring me a picture. Let me put it up. Let me empower you like that. Now, also, you know, books. A lot of guys that's in prison read books. Some of the books that's being sold right now, the number one sellers, it ain't for people that's on the street. It's on people that's incarcerated, believe it or not, and how I know because I've been there.
Well, not only in prison, it's a number of men, black men especially, that actually read out here in the streets.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a whole bunch. You're right.
Not just
you're
in the prison
right.
system. You may think it's more in the prison system, but I'm sorry to tell you that, but it's not. It's more black men out here on the street living day to day that read more than the ones that's locked up.
I can say I've been on this side because you have more
entrepreneurs. I don't know no entrepreneurs.
You have more entrepreneurs in prison. Half the guys that's in prison.
I'm saying you have
what businessmen? Well, let me ask you this:
Do you think that my notion of this, and I don't know because I'm not a black man and I've never been in prison. However, my notion is that when people are incarcerated, that they may be more inclined to read because you don't have anything else to do.
That's it. I read too.
Okay. Read and lift weights.
You know, I mean.
And braid hair.
I mean.
You better not be braiding no man.
And men that have been to prison, they get out and feel like, well, I should have stayed. I feel like prison was better because it's hard out here.
Because it's structured. There's structure there, but what I'm looking for is those things that put you on the road to. For instance, I was talking to a guy friend of mine, and I was talking about another friend that is a teacher and the situations that they deal with in their classroom. And there's a little boy who is, I'm sure, probably a good kid, you know, because I hear about the kids all the time. But he has a crush on her. He is a terribly mannish little boy. However, I think that's funny. I don't think that, or I understand where it could be problematic, but I also realize where it can be directed. But he's the little boy that he comes in and touches her leg. And I'm like, okay, well, you probably need to shut him down with that one there. He'll say, well, my daddy said you cute. Or so his home life is not right. And she was moved to another class, and with the teacher that came into that classroom basically got the little boy, and inside of 2 days, he was suspended for a week. Mm-hmm. And when she told me about it, I said, you know what you do? You need to go to your principal and tell her to put somebody else in this new class and you get back to your kids. Because it's they're high-risk kids, so they have already bonded with her. They love her. And whatever cutting up they do with her, they do it with her. But she can kind of settle them down. I explained to her, because I don't think she understood, that as a teacher, when you have children who come out of a household that is not the best situation, you are their last hope. You are their last hope. That little boy at 5 years old has issues at five. Because those things are not being addressed, he will then become a man who does not have those issues addressed, or a young man. And the guy friend that I was talking to when I was telling him this, he made a point to me, which is why I ended up doing the show. He was like, well, what do people expect when, as little boys, when you are in school, you are labeled right away as bad? You are a problem. You are considered slow. You are all of these things. And basically what he was saying is because of the negative things that are thought about black people in general, but black men in particular. And how do you, as a child, navigate those waters? How do you, when you are 10, as he said, and you are viewed to be 17, you are looked at as an adult, and then they come to you and they when they label you, they say that you are angry. That is the thing that I am talking about. I don't mean that, oh, well, you know what? We have to make everybody, you know, let's each one talk to the other one and let's everybody say good things. I believe that you do that, but I believe what you do first is get to that place where people hurt. Yeah. You all hurt. Black women hurt, but you all know what our hurt is, because we'll tell you. We'll tell it. We'll put it on social media. Everybody will know. Yeah. And you know because you come from households with mothers who hurt. So you see them. So when I say a forum for black men, I mean those things that hurt. Whether you are, as an adult, a lot of times you won't acknowledge those things. But as a young man, at some point, something happened. You went to school and you had a teacher, black, white, male, female, whichever it was, and you really worked hard on something. And when you took it to them, they were very dismissive. Mm-hmm. That hurt. Because you all don't have the avenues to let those things out. That's what I mean, the stuff that you were talking about. And even with what you were saying, Bravo, when you talk about you, the way that you work through it is you go to the gym. Or I get that and I understand it because in a lot of ways I am wired like men are wired. I like to accomplish things. I like to build things. And I have had men tell me, oh, well, you don't need a man. Okay, well, that's retarded. It's not that I don't, well, I don't need you. I may like to have you around, but I actually like to build things. I like to accomplish things.
Can I say something real quick? That right there, what you just said, sometimes to a black man is interpreted totally different. I don't need you. Because I'm going to tell you why. Because we need our black women. Point blank, period. It ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And a lot of times when a woman says certain things and they think they don't say it.
Well, no. And let me clarify. I'm not saying it like I don't go to him and say, oh, well, I don't need you. I don't, because I'm not the chick that puts a dude down. Right. I don't do that. But I do explain. For me, first of all, I would much rather be wanted than needed. Because if you need someone, you will deal with a lot of things that you wouldn't otherwise be bothered with. Because you need them. Women, when they need men, put up with a lot of shit. If you need a roof over your head, you will deal with a lot of shit from a dude. If you got kids that you need taken care of, you will deal with a lot of things because you need them. When you want someone, that is a powerful goddamn drug.
Black men actually feel entitled nowadays because they so much, it's the dating scene since I've been in Dallas about 4 years. I meet a lot of women. I'm not from here, from New Orleans. So I meet a lot of women. They always say, a lot of dudes say, oh, man, they choosing in here. That's the term that goes around. Are they choosing? Men don't approach women anymore. They expect the women to approach them. A lot of men feel like entitled to sex, their attention, their money as well. A lot of guys.
Where does that come from, please?
What do you mean?
Where does that come from? Sense of entitlement.
I single parents. Single mother raising mothers raising single young men.
Well, but let me ask you this because I've thought about this. Do you think that it is because they feel entitled, or do you think it's because when they were children they didn't see a man doing it, so they just assumed in their child mind that that is what women do?
Well, what you do parts. Wrong
it depends on the person.
When you do wrong as a child nowadays, say in school, if I did something bad, my teacher said that my grandma would be like, whip his ass. Now, now your parent can go to school, whip the teacher's ass, and you still get rewarded with an Xbox, a PS4, whatever, and you messed up at school.
Yep.
And so it's like, so you feel like you're entitled. Oh, I could cheat on you. I could beat you. I could.
Can I tell you where I think that comes from, though? No. That style of parenting. I had this conversation with my mother yesterday, sort of. I think that one of the things that as a people that we have to do is we need to understand when you have children, before you are ready to have children and not just physically produce a child, because technically I know girls that had periods at 8. Damn. So at 8, you can physically produce a child, but there are other parts that need to be developed to produce a kid. So if you have a kid at 20, you may be ready, but probably not. And you think somehow your kid is special, and not that they aren't special to you, but when you go to your kid's school and show you're behind, there's 15 other kids in that class, and you act as if the teacher did something to your kid.
No.
That, but for me, having children, and I think I've said it on the show before, I just throw out 28 because I think that from your late teens into your late 20s, that's adult puberty.
Yeah.
That's when you figure out who you are and what you're about, what you think is right or wrong, what you stand on. You know what? I dated this dude, but I didn't really like him, and I dated that. You know, when I was 17, my first boyfriend was like 5'9". I'm 5'9". First boyfriend. It took about 3 years to get past that 5'9", because you develop and grow past things. Mm-hmm. But at 17, and he's still a good dude. Great dude.
No.
But if you're going to produce children... And once you get a good solid generation of people who will produce children when they are not ready, you have a problem.
Exactly, I have more grandmothers that's in their 30s. Well, so
you have a problem.
Buckle your seatbelt because we're gonna have a problem till we die. Yeah. Because
no, I think you can fix it.
No, it can't be fixed because.
Well, that's crazy.
It can't be fixed. We can each one reach one.
That's fixing it.
But you know, right now, though, you know, the teen pregnancies then went down. You know that, right?
Yeah,
that it has. I mean, it truly has. And also this here, and I have to kind of say this to some of the young brothers that I've seen out here. They be with their kids now. Some of the stuff they do with their kids, I be saying, man, hey, man, you got your little shorty with you. Hey, man, you need to kind of do a little different. They be like, all right, I got you right, You know,
because you can't be afraid to talk to them.
And see, and a lot of times. These guys, I can go anywhere. I can go anywhere in Dallas, period. In any other state, you know, with the right attitude.
Right.
With the right, if you see a young man with his pants down, or you see a woman coming through the door, I say, hey, little dude, man, grab that door for that lady right there. They be like, oh, okay. Already, man. Good deal.
It's like a cry out, almost like what you're saying, what L was saying. It's like when you tell them that, they're looking for that because they want to be told how they should act. And then a lot of times, a lot of people don't say things like L, say to young cats, because you still have that, we viewed as aggressive. So when you see another black man that you don't know, we be like, man, I don't fuck with them niggas. So you look at them as aggressive, with aggression.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you like, if I'm sitting over with my boys and they looking at us, I'm like, we over here for chicks. Like, why are they looking at us? So now we already got this tension.
Exactly.
So right. When you're on the street, you don't be like, hey, man, do this, man. You know, I do commend you for that because I'm trying to get into that. Trying to remove that aggression towards other black men, because when you look at each other, I always say acknowledge
them. When you look at them, see you.
Exactly. So I say always acknowledge them now. And you're like, hey, what's up, man? If you speak to them, it takes away that aggression.
Absolutely. Even if they don't speak to you.
Exactly.
I rode the train for a couple years, and initially it wasn't because I basically had to initially, but I enjoyed it after that because you come in contact with people and you see. For me, I see black kids, I talk to them. And I'm the person that if my friends will tell you on, because I posted on Facebook, I have been on the train and had a young couple sitting behind me. And the dude, they're probably all of 19 years old. The dude is basically like, well, I don't know why you're going over there. She's going to get a job or going, whatever she was doing. His insecurity and fear of losing her had him going in on her. And because this is why I say, if you can fix what ails black men, You can fix 80% of what ails black people, because if that boy had anybody in his corner to say, hey, you know what? It's okay. You good. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have been pulling at her, because she's ready to go to college. She's ready to do this. She's ready to do that. And I know, because I gave her my phone number, and it got so bad that where she got up and moved and came and sat behind me. And then he came and sat in right behind me, right next to her, talking to her, and just kept going. And I could tell this dude, this little kid here, is scared.
Yeah, that's his backbone. So, like, women are a black man's backbone most
of
the time.
But I believe also the nature of men is to be destructive. And I don't say that in a bad way, like, oh, my gosh, you're just tearing stuff up. I mean, when men, particularly black men, are very
aggressive.
Not so much even aggressive. Black men are
in fear.
Yeah, that black men are very strong, and I don't mean strong physically as in they're going to tear stuff up, but just when you get a black man whose energy is right, who knows himself, who is comfortable with himself, black men are it. Yeah. They are it. But when you take that, what I was saying about when you were talking about empowering, when it's not quite right, that power is still in there, and it comes out. But it comes out with rap music that demeans black women, the people who took care of you. And you don't stop. There's never the thought of, you know what? We are the only men who talk shit about our women on music and put it into perpetuity. And we the only men that got women that hold us down like we do, meaning black men and black women.
So how do we fix that? Because say we had 10 houses on one block.
Mm-hmm.
Five of those homes have gangster rap in it. Two of those homes have pop music, and the other homes have Christian music. How would you be able to? How would you be able to fix all that? As far as the ones that's have the gangster rap in it, that's degrading women. That's walking up and down the street with their pants sagging, or and every time you see them, you tell them to pull their pants up, you know.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. With your scenario, what's happening in these households? Are there fathers in the household? Or I will tell you, this is what I say. This is how I think that you attack it, and I don't feel like I have all the answers. But if you stop teen pregnancy, if you stop young people from having children before they are 28 years old, if you in a household, because again, at 19, 20 years old, I was in the military. I was tearing it up. I was out of the country. I was whatever the hell I felt like doing. When I went to college, I did all the stuff that I was supposed to do when I was supposed to do it. I didn't have to make the decision of, well, do I want to stay home with the baby or do I want to go to the club? Or be frustrated because I'm at home with the baby when I want to be at the club, or make the decision to leave my kid with somebody that my kid shouldn't be with because I have the normal desire to socialize and be with my friends. And for me, when you determine, okay, well, you know what, we need to attack this whole bit of not so much even just teen pregnancy, but young people having babies. As black people, we got to figure out in our heads, you ain't grown at 18, so stop sending your kids out.
Well, I think that to his point, teen pregnancy is not the root cause, because, as he said, you know, teen pregnancy is on the decline.
Right, but you know what you do? So, the mentality that puts you in that position where you are having sex or whatever that is, you may not necessarily be able to fix that, but that can correct itself. If, in fact, there is not a kid involved, if a 17-year-old girl and a 19-year-old boy are not tied together for life and thrown into adulthood trying to figure out how to make this work, that will go away. It comes with maturity.
Right. Well, I think that, and I have two daughters. One's 23 and the other one is 17. And so the thing that I realized early on in raising my daughters was that number one, because they are young women, that even on my best day would help, that they can outsmart me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that women typically are smarter than men. So right there, I'm already at a disadvantage. The second thing is that I believe, when I really started thinking about this, and all of us can probably relate to this here, when we were in high school, when we graduated high school, did we have these?
Nah.
We didn't have these. These.
He's waving his cell phone. You're on the radio, sir. Yeah, say what you're doing.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I got the iPhone, right? So this, you know, technology and innovation has, and especially with these cell phones, you know, I think that the cell phones basically are a good thing, and they also are an evil, because what it allows, especially with, because we didn't have social media when we was coming up. Mm-hmm. So I think that now what has happened is that, and it goes back to your point, that, you know, we can't, I don't know how you fix it, because as long as there is Facebook, as long as there is Snapchat, as long as there's the next app that allows people to kind of hide.
Do you talk to your children about sex?
Oh, most definitely.
You all talk to sons about sex?
Yes, we do, but what percentage of homes are being talked to about sex?
Let me say this. I think that if, when I talk in terms of education, when you don't control what you eat, I'm growing potatoes. Not that anybody in here cares. But if you don't control what you eat, if you do not control how you educate your children, if you don't control, if you don't have businesses, if you don't control your finances with banking, if you don't control those things, you don't control anything.
Well, we're living in a different society now. You're speaking of this generation.
No, I'm not.
Because the millennials, they don't know nothing about what you're talking about.
If they don't know it, it's because their parents didn't teach them.
Because their parents didn't know.
Okay, but again, that goes back to my point where I said about, basically, if you get one generation off, then you have a problem. And not even so much off, and let me say this, not even just, okay, well, you know what? You have kids, because my mother and I had this conversation yesterday where you can have, my mother is 71. In my mother's day and age, and even prior to that, you could have a kid at 18, 19 years old and be okay. Not only, society has changed too much for you to have a kid at that age and everything still go unaffected. It can't happen like that. So, and if you're looking at it going into each individual household, the way that you get into each house is school. It's education. It's what you teach your children. So if your kids go to a school and they don't discuss sex education, if your kids are in a school where they don't talk to boys about pregnancy, because girls catch it all the time. My mother just told me yesterday, I told you when you were a kid, if you brought home a baby, your life was going to be over. You couldn't play basketball no more. You couldn't go on those school trips. You couldn't cheerlead.
But see, I think that part of what, and this is what I'll say the problem is, I think that we as black folk, people, we need to wake up. Mm-hmm. And we need to be honest, and we need to see that.
Wake up in what way?
Wake up and be honest in the sense of, because when I was growing up, you know, and my dad and mom were married, but my dad worked so much, I don't remember him ever taking me to the barbershop. My mom did all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And my mom, you know, my dad brought his check home, was a great man, brought his check home, did all of that, but he didn't have that conversation with us. So now what I learned to do, and I'll tell you, the secret in both of my daughters, neither one of them are pregnant, thank God, and I've encouraged them to wait until they're 28 or 30 years old. And I'll tell you the secret, at least to my success in parenting, is that when I started watching this TV show, 16 and Pregnant, that's when I became a better dad. Because now I got a chance to look at how these young kids interact in their world, and now I got raw in communicating with my daughters.
Of course you should. But you are a guy. Here's the thing, let me ask you, as a dude, with all the stuff that dudes do when they're young.
See, I wasn't doing it at first, though.
No. I mean, when you are a young man, when young men are out in the streets doing what y'all do, okay, you're the exception. Out in the streets doing what y'all do, y'all don't realize y'all daughters is.
See, you don't bring that home, though. But see, the thing. But
I don't care if you bring it home or not. That's your daughter. Your daughter ain't somebody else's daughter.
Listen to his point. Can he finish his
point? But see, what I'm saying is that when I was raising my daughters, I was raising my daughters like I was raised initially. Hold on.
So
hold
are
on.
You telling well, me, I'm looking for clarity. Hold I'm on. Looking for clarity. So are you telling me then that as a young man, when you are out and you talking chicks out of their drawers, so to speak, you don't tell your daughters that men do that?
No, because the thing about
I
it
did.
Is, but hold on.
I
but,
keep it 100 with my square. I'm talking about.
But hold on, let me finish this.
Okay, hold on, because see, I was trying to make sure he and I were talking about the same thing, but we are. Yes.
Each one of us was raised. Because see, I was raised a little different in the sense that I was very sheltered, didn't date. My mom kept us close to the cuff, you know, skirt mm-hmm. tail. Mm-hmm. You know, I had the size to play football. She wouldn't let us. My mom kept us skirted. I mean, right. I didn't date in high school. I didn't, you know, I didn't do any of those things. So when I got out, it's like the 80s, you know, like rap and Sugar Hill and stuff like that. I don't know any of that kind of stuff. It's like I missed a whole generation of just information.
Hold your hand out.
So when I
hold your hand out over here.
So when I got to
make sure you real.
Right. So when I got,
No. And this is what I want. This is what I want.
So what I did was, I started raising my daughters thinking that they were little queens. I give them everything they want, you know. And my wife, she say, okay, well, take them to the dollar store. I take them to Nordstrom's. You know, my 17-year-old, she buys her makeup from Nordstrom. Mm-hmm. You know, she's spending $200 in a minute. And so me, I'll give her $400 to spend. But the thing, to the point that I'm making, is that where I was making my mistake was, is that I wasn't communicating with my daughters openly and honestly. About that's what I was,
but because it wasn't your reality,
because it wasn't my reality. So,
but that's one of the things that I'm saying, that as men or as people in general, you have to acknowledge, you have to be able to look, be very interested, look at your life. And I was raised in the church,
and so therefore, what I'm saying is that I think that where the starting point is, because you know, because this is different than mine, his reality or his. Is completely different than my truth. I wasn't raised like all of us are not.
Okay, well,
but my dad was a deacon. I mean, I'm running a two-parent household. My parents were married 50 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, my dad was his own entrepreneur. It's just not what my reality was that, but I seen something different. And this is what I think she's saying. See, what I seen out there was I wanted. My dad was my parents then were like, hey, look, now this, you gotta go to school, you gonna go to school, you gonna go to church, you gonna go to choir, you gonna do this. I mean strict, you know, they structured. I couldn't go outside, I couldn't go down the street. Mm-hmm. Street lights, come on, you better come in. Mm-hmm. With the summertime I had to go to work. I had to go work with them, you know, and it was a structured lifestyle, but what I'm saying just causes that, and that's a great thing for your daughters, because now you're teaching your daughters how a man is supposed to come to them. But what about the young men that don't know how to come to them? And that's the problem what she's saying about black men. See, the black women got it because you gave it to yours. I mean, do you kind of see what I'm saying?
No, right. I do. But I think that it starts with I think that it starts with us opening our eyes and seeing that, you know, and to the point, I think that we will never be able to compete with social media.
Oh, no.
And so until we grasp that understanding mm-hmm. that right now we have, so as black parents, our enemy is social media and reality TV. Those are the things, excuse me, that are now basically destroying the minds of our young generation. Right. So therefore, I as a parent, I can't compete with love and hip hop.
Reality.
As a parent, I can't compete with Snapchat.
But you're not supposed to.
But can you use it as a teaching tool?
I can use it as a tool. But the thing about it, I have to understand. Parents have to understand that if you're going to fix at least the black man, I think that we have to fix the black family.
That's right.
No.
You know.
Yes.
I disagree.
Yes, and I'll tell you why. That's why I haven't been really silent on this. Because
right,
because
I've been watching you over there.
Well, because I love to watch people weigh in and share. And Anthony, right? Mm-hmm. Anthony, first of all, let me applaud you for realizing that when you were not being the maximum father that you could be, when you found out and realized there were some other things that you could share, mm-hmm. you went to it. You said, you know what? I didn't know I should be coming to my daughters like this. But now that I know, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And like the brother said over there, I'm not one to see a young man doing wrong in the street and say something about it unless it affects me or somebody I know. But I have two sons of my own, teenage boys, and I make sure that I've been the example. Mm-hmm. Even when I'm not at my best, I say, you know what? Julian Jonathan, I handled it the wrong way. I was upset about it, so I'm going to apologize.
Right.
And because I started apologizing to them at a young age,
right,
we never had any problems. So now when they go out in the street and they do somebody wrong or see somebody doing wrong, they'll jump off and say, man, you need to apologize to that cat. You can't be that wrong.
Right.
And I applaud you on that.
Right. And see, my example now is spreading throughout their lives and hopefully throughout their friends. Now, a couple of times they came up against cats who didn't have a father who talked to them that way. So it's like, I ain't apologizing. That's for punks. And they got into it. But my boys are good with their hands because we work it out in the garage.
Exactly.
So then I was like, okay, you weren't being a punk. That was something else different about you. So then they start coming to my son saying, dude, you could have just let it ride or you could have jumped on him about it because you're good with your hands, but you didn't. He said, my dad taught me, first of all, you can walk away from anything if somebody lets you.
That's right.
I grew up without my father. I grew up in a single parent household with a sister who was a year older than me. My mom was a teenager, and I saw all that was wrong going on in my neighborhood, dudes, you know, slanging, pimping, whatever, you know, you're doing. And I just said, I don't want to be that. I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to get on drugs. I don't want to have a child out of wedlock. So I made sure to wrap it up, strap it up, and told all my friends, y'all can have babies and disease, whatever y'all gonna do. I'm gonna go to college and I'm gonna order military and I'm gonna do something different. But I said that to say I knew what my purpose was.
There you go.
And I share with my sons, and I even speak to high school and junior high schools all over the Dallas area, mentoring groups, and ask them, do you know what your purpose is? Do you really know what you want to be?
Have you ever read that book, Miles Monroe? Purpose-driven
life.
That's Nick Warren. It'll come to me.
All right, come back to me. No, gotcha. I haven't. But tell me about it because I need to look at it because there are a lot of young people I talk to who have no idea. Well, you know, I want to finish school, I guess.
They
idea. And because they don't have mentoring organizations like Kevin's group or anybody coming and sharing with them and asking a simple question. So when I go talk to them in schools, I ask them one by one, what do you want to be?
You know what I call that?
What's that?
Victor. When I talk to people, I will tell them I have a friend that I've been friends with since I was 14 years old. She is like a sister to me. Mm-hmm. She is incredibly focused and was focused at 14. I could see it in her, didn't know what it was. I wasn't that focused. It's like being a camera lens. Some are autofocus.
Mm-hmm.
Some you focus manually.
Mm-hmm.
If you are an autofocus person, when you deal, if you're in a situation that you say you came out of and you realize, okay, I don't want this, you're great. You ain't the kid we need to get to.
Right, but I can share because I could have easily been.
Right, no, exactly. But this then speaks to who you are just as a person.
Right, so.
But when you get to other kids, when you see that kid that's just what they see every day and they just don't.
Right. Which is most other kids.
Right.
And if I didn't, like Anthony does, and if you don't, as a father, take the time to share and inspire some type of purpose in your child, then they won't get it either.
Okay,
they,
but they wait a minute.
With an auto-focused person in the household and never get it.
Now I'm reeling you back in because you guys made the point of fixing the family.
That's where I was.
And I was saying, and let me tell you why
it's too late to fix the black man. I think that it's far gone. I think now, because as a black man, I'm going to tell you something. If I'm going to dumb shit, you my woman, I need help. Stop looking at me and try to piggyback.
Yeah, but that's different, though. Different.
No,
I want to hear his point because I've never heard this point before.
The problem, I think that part of the thing now where we stand today in 2017 with everything against us, I need help.
But if you're going to say that you don't think that it's too late to fix, going to say, not you, not you.
You're saying it's a helpmate?
I need a helpmate.
But here's the thing, though.
Here's the thing. Watch this. I need a helpmate. I need for you to get on the other side of that board and put it on your back. I got it on my back. And let's get these kids and let's decide what we're going to be and what we're going to do. And let's get to the top.
Well, let me tell you the fallout from that.
No, there should be no fallout.
No. Let me tell you what the fallout is. The fallout is when you say it is too late to save the black man, you throw away them kids you see on the street.
No, because the thing about
it. You have to. That's the fallout.
No. Yeah.
Then you don't have any concern for them.
That right now, what is mounted against us as a black society is too big for the black man. What is mounted against us as a black society?
I'm not saying that the black man has to do it. What I'm saying is,
if you fix
80% of what's wrong.
So therefore, what I'm saying is that what's out there is monsters. And so we got the police against us. We got the politicians against us. We got
employers.
We got employers against us. So here's the thing. Socially and economically, out there is monster.
Well, what you gonna do with them dudes that don't know they need a helpmate?
So what I'm saying is that they need to understand that they need a helpmate.
How they can't just understand
because, because we can't, because as black men now, the task is too mounted. It's too big.
These are not autofocus kids.
It's never been.
Right.
Hey, check this out,
Anthony. I don't know if you believe what you're saying, because in one breath you said there's no hope, and then the other breath you're saying all we got to do is mount up. My wife hook this up, get our kids. Those are two different parallel opinions that would never meet.
But no, I'm saying that in terms of hope. If we're saying that, I'm going off the premise of. If we're saying that if we fix the black man, that now, because 80% is a big number, right?
Well, so for clarity, though, let me tell you what I said again, because I did say it wrong the first time. If you fix the black man, you will fix 80% of what is wrong with black people. And what I mean is, when as a black woman, when I am in a situation with a man and I don't have children, but if I'm in a situation with a dude and you a fucking problem, you're a fucking problem.
And that's fair.
And let me finish.
And that's fair.
You are a problem. So not only do I have to be bothered with you trying to keep this together because I got to raise the person that I sleep with, I then have children over here. And I have to worry about what my children are doing and what I have to give to them emotionally. I have to take care of these things. When you if you can get a black dude that's right, you can have a family and the dude is all fucked off and crazy. Soon as she dumps him and she gets a dude that comes in that want to be a stepfather, that wants to be a husband, that is doing man shit, that household runs so much more smoothly. 80% of what was wrong in that house is fixed, because some things are just going to be things. Life deals you problems. That's just how that's going to work out. If I'm dating you, you can't be a problem.
But I think that going back to the premise, if you go, because the underlying assumption is... The underlying assumption is that the black man is the target, and so
he is in more ways than one.
And so what I'm saying is that because when I walk out that door, I got a target on my back, and I'm sitting up here like, no, I need, you know, the what's out there is too big and too surmount for I want black man as an individual.
No, it's not.
How you figure?
No, it's not.
Okay, because...
What do you mean?
How you figure? Yeah, it's not. I don't think men is too big or too strong or overpowered. We can't overcome.
Black man, that's who I'm looking really for right there.
No.
You who I'm looking for. You my man.
I think we just got to fight harder.
No, but how are we going to fight harder?
And stop fighting each other.
How are we going to fight harder when... So, in the prison population, let's talk about the prison population.
Come on, I can talk to you about
that. Is the prison population primarily white, or is it primarily black?
It's black.
What is the point of that?
It's black.
The point that I'm making is that when you say that, oh, well, we can do this. What I'm saying is that if we look at the numbers, economically.
I'm going to break your shit down right now. Let me tell you. No. Yes, I can.
But hold on.
Trust me, I can. Okay, I'm a black woman. I can do all things, baby doll. Let me tell you how. Let me break it down for you. The reason that black people are in prison like they are, some of it has to do, first, we have to own some. We do some stupid shit sometimes and get caught. The second thing is we don't get involved in our communities. We don't finish high school. We don't vote. We don't run for public office. You do the stuff that you're supposed to do. Black people can fix what is wrong with black people, but you cannot take that woe is me attitude about it.
But the thing about it is this here, is that the reason why I believe that black people are primarily in prison is that because economically they have no outlet economically to go.
Because you take your money to Wells Fargo, because you take your money to Bank of America. You do not take your money to the black bank that's in your neighborhood.
No. I'm gonna tell you what.
There's at least three in Dallas.
That's part of it too, because there's no one answer.
We
flowers and still got the best of the best, but then
rolling on spinners. And I just wanted to say that
so I do believe that we got to come together. See, one thing I do know about blacks is this: we're stronger than what people even give us credit for.
If we weren't the strongest people on the planet, they wouldn't come at us like they do.
But I do believe we are so broken. I believe we are so broken that it starts with the youth right now, with the kids that's in the household right now, like with their young, with this man right here, what's your name again?
Victor.
Victor was saying what he does, what you do with your daughter, what this man does. These are allies. So guess what happens? If you can grab one dude and say, hey, let me teach you this something, because I can see something
in you.
The
reason why I talk to my daughters mm-hmm. and I deal with them the way I do is that because I realize, for one, that economically, if they go and have a baby on their own, mm-hmm. that their life is going to be hell.
Absolutely.
So here's the thing. Even when we and I think that money empowers us in a sense that, you know, and I don't know, I forget the numbers. It says like in the Hispanic community, Asian community, the dollar touches hands so many times.
But then in our community,
as you said, right. we get it; it goes straight out
because we want to be like the white man.
That's part of it. But also, we have been broken as a community. When you look at Wall Street in Oklahoma, Black Wall Street,
yeah.
we had things, and that money stayed in that community right. at least it rotated 10 times right. before it came out of there.
So what I started to do, because
you moved back from Plano, get back into South Dallas with your kids.
Stop sending your daughters to Nordstrom.
No, you know what I'm going to do?
I'm just kidding.
I'm going to send my daughters to Nordstrom, and I'm going to stay in Frisco where I live at. But you know what I'm going to do, because I own a business? What I've started to do now, because I own a business, I say, you know what? I got to put dollars in somebody's black hands.
Absolutely. So on purpose.
So what I purposely do is find black folk to work with.
Yes, you should.
So that way, but again, it wasn't until, so that knowledge today that I have, I didn't have that knowledge mm-hmm. yesterday.
Right. See, that's an answer.
That's your truth.
I like answers. Yes. That's an answer.
Okay,
but how effective is it? See, this thing about it, we all have a bunch of answers, but how effective, and which is a good thing. And when you say that you are putting back into black, you know, into black businesses, that's a plus. But also, what about the ones that don't have the black businesses? What about the ones that need a job? What about the ones who struggling, who really, I mean, cars wasn't dealt right? Because it's a lot of them out here, cars not, hey man, unfortunately, your cars wasn't dealt right, and this is what it is. Same thing I tell my grandkids when we go, see, I'm an active grandparent and a father in the schoolhouse. They see me more, I don't need my wife, I don't need my daughters, I don't need them going to see about these, I got this. Call me, look at homework, projects, it's my duty to teach them that right now, man, it's on y'all to save this world.
So you've already,
it's on y'all, because right now, right, granddaddy done been to prison, granddaddy done this. See, I done already set a bad example, and guess what they told me? They been in prison, not for you no more, Mr. Mitchell. And this was back in 1991. They be in the prison for your sons and grandchildren.
That's right.
Because guess what? Because by looking at me, they saying, okay, well, I graduated, I'm educated. I'm not dumb by a long shot, but I just chose a different route.
Choice.
So they looked at me and were like, well, we analyze you, and so we're going to keep you coming back.
All right, so you show up at the school because you've already decided part of your purpose in life is going to be being there for your children or grandchildren.
I got to say, but not only them, but the other kids that's there.
But you are participating in your purpose. That's where change comes from.
That's what I'm talking about.
So I'm telling you, I applaud brothers and sisters, but especially brothers who can step outside of themselves and say, you know what? I'm going to make sure these kids get a better shot than I got.
Oh, yeah.
That's saying something. That's an answer. I forgot who was it that said it earlier about relationships and young men. I grew up without a father. I met my father at 18, met him, didn't think much of him. I was like, whatever, probably good that I didn't meet him. But I was an outstanding athlete, football and track, you know, all state and all that, because I decided when I was 10 years old, I'm gonna do everything I can to embarrass this cat, to let him know that how great I can become. And he wasn't a part of my life. He didn't offer anything other than, you know, laying up with my mom, you know, so many years ago. So I use all that negative fuel
right.
to become a better athlete and then a better individual. And I don't think every child is made that way.
Exactly.
But what I had to take from that was, and I just learned this recently about myself. I've been married 20 years now, but for a very long time, I had commitment issues with women. Because when I didn't realize this, I was talking to a psychologist that said a lot of our black men now going through that
four to five times as much as my generation was because of that same issue. Dads aren't in the relationship. They're not in the household. They don't. So we feel abandoned. Mm-hmm. So instead of and we have commitment issues. So when we meet a female that we, you know, attracted to, girl, I love you. You, I know you're a good thing for me. You're mom and my mom, grandma, what have you. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm man enough. I don't know if I'm good enough. I don't know if I have what it takes to be in a lasting relationship. Right. So now they're seeing that, and you got teenage pregnancies. Even though they're going down, we still have brothers like Bree said, laying down with any sister that's going to throw their legs open, seeing how far I can get with this.
Right.
That issue that men now our age, 40, 50 plus, who don't even realize that a lot of us are still broken from our childhood.
That's what I was talking about.
I was going to commend you for not having a father growing up, because like if I, me as being 30, didn't having a father growing up, I would have wanted a father like you to actually teach me those things. Because I believe my root cause, like why we are the way we are, and I'm going through this now, the past few years, we all got daddy issues. Mm-hmm. And we always talk about women got daddy issues. That's how we prey on women, how we know we can sleep with them quick if they got daddy issues.
Absolutely.
That's what we call it in college.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, y'all can smell that. I don't even know what that is. Y'all can smell it on women.
She got daddy issues.
Okay, go ahead. Tell me what that is. Let's talk about that.
That's why she's going to be on the pole.
Ease up. Retired stripper here. Ain't nothing wrong with a pole. I bought a house.
Victor touched like greatly on it, so I won't even go too deep on it, but like
you go
said,
where you want
to
go.
It was like the dad issues. Not having a father, I don't commit to women right now. You know, I date.
Do you not commit because you don't know how?
I know how to commit. I actually do. But it's.
Well, what's your problem?
It's a choice. It's because I had the feeling of it's coming up. Like, I always wanted to be that, had that approval. Like, damn, why don't this dude even want me? I'm like, shit, I'm good in school. I'm good in sports. I'm not gay. I'm like ideal son that he would want. And the nigga still don't even acknowledge me. So coming up, it's like it hurts.
Ego tripping.
Huh? Man, bro. It's like, I be like, you know what? You know, the guy, I have a relationship. I look at him as a friend more than a father because he wasn't there. I got raised by like dudes in the neighborhood, my uncles, and everybody.
So you have a relationship now with your dad?
My sperm donor.
Which bio dad?
We cool. It's like, you know, we talk from time to time, but I can't really go to him because even though I
have you ever asked him why?
Oh, I plan to this year. I'm working towards that.
Listen, let me tell you something, because this is what this is like the point of the show. We're kind of going all over the place with it, but this is what I wanted, because I can guarantee you, if your father could say what it is, he It'll felt the way me. You felt.
I know exactly.
First of all, if he apologizes, that will fix you.
I already know it would, but see, that's the thing. To approach it, it's like, how do I come to this man and tell this man how I'm feeling? Because I'm still like, okay, you have the insecurities. Like, how can I come to this man and open
just
up?
Just say
like,
it.
Hey, can I say
hey,
this?
It's harder than what you think.
No. However hard you think it is, just say it.
Hey, let me say this, because, man, I feel you on that, because my son is 24. You know, I've been in and out of prison his whole life, damn near. And he came to me heart to heart. You know, I'm still thinking I had this kind of power still, like I'm dad, you know, you still got to do, you still got, you know, and then I kind of come to a subtle like, you know, and then he just had to come down to me and tell me, he just broke it down. Hey man, let me just talk to you. He said, I love you to death. You my dad, but this. And he was hurting. He went back so far to where I didn't think he, you know what I'm saying? And it's all that trash, all that stuff that I wasn't there for, and some part that I kind of hurt and caused. That's why I am today. When she said something about doing this, helping the black man, and I do believe it definitely helps me, because every time I get a chance to speak or hear other brothers speak, it gives me motivation. So the next day, when I go in with a plan, with a master plan now. Well, guess what? See, I got this from my son. I got this from this gentleman. I got this from this gentleman. I got this. So I'm going to use this. You know what I'm saying? God gave me another chance. You know, he gave me some little bit and was to get it right. I didn't get it right the first time. Well, you get a chance to get it right this time. So you got to just go to him. I mean, just because it helps you. Because he told me, he said, man, Dad, it ain't for you. He said, it's for me.
And that's what it really is. And I understand. I kind of understood that the past couple of years. And I know what it takes. But it's like part of me is like, I don't want to.
Because you want him to come to you.
That's true. Hold on one second. And that's true. It's like, are you saying like, it's like I was rejected. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, the money, all that shit didn't matter. I wanted your ass there at the football game to graduations. So when I
reject you, wanted to be valued,
exactly
cared
so
about.
When I reject you, I expect your ass to keep coming back because that's how I felt when I kept coming for you.
Exactly.
So you know, so it's like I understand that I need, that I should do, and I want to do it. But part of me, like, I want you to understand, like, you need to keep fighting for me how much I want to fight for you.
That's right.
So that's what it came down. But that's why I said off the daddy issues that we go.
Hey,
through.
But I tell you what, it does. It will make him talk about it. It should. It should. If he any type of stand up dude to kind of say, you know, some 30 years my son went through this. See, what you gonna be to put something on his brain that's gonna affect something right here.
And let me tell you, I think too.
I've been raised in the home with both of my parents, my mother and my father. They have given me a prime example of the way a man should take her as home, take her as wife, and take care of his business. Now, I don't know what it's like to not have a parent in the home, but I will say this, that if a man is a man, it's the man, and he has children, it's the man's responsibility to stand up. A son, my son, should have no business coming to me trying to mend. I'm supposed to go to him. Because I'm the father.
But if he's damaged.
Yeah, but if you don't know.
If the father is an adult damaged child.
But what if you just don't know? Because I didn't know I heard him like that. I mean, I know he was upset because the letters. But I thought, when I come home, you know, this is like I say, it wasn't about the money. Because the money was there. We did this and did this. But it wasn't about that. So I didn't understand to that certain point to where, well, you know, I went to him. Hey, you know, I'm sorry. Hey, man, don't go down this route. So I didn't know how to mend that, but he did. See, that's the thing about it, you know, and I understand what you're saying. As a grown man, you're supposed to know, but you don't know. See, you don't know what he's hurting because even though he's rejecting, I mean, he's kind of like, hey, what's up? We talking on the phone. You know, you thinking, oh, well, you know something? Oh, my, he talking to me, so.
It's all good.
Yeah. See, it all depends on the.
Let me say this.
It's not in every case, though.
Right.
Until you get them shoes, though.
But that's not in every case. My father didn't even have a dad. He didn't have a relationship with his dad at all.
And he may have just realized, I don't want this, mm-hmm. so I am going to stay.
Well, you know, that too. That too.
Because just like Victor is saying,
the main thing is that he received the Lord in his heart. And unforgiveness runs a long way if you don't address it. You want to get to the root issue? It's unforgiveness.
Who's not forgiven? My parents divorced when I was 2. My father did not raise me. But I reached out to my brother when I was probably 27, I think. And I drove from Kansas City to Denver, Labor Day weekend. Knew who my father was when I saw him because I am him. My dad and I talked. We were talking about something completely different. Didn't have anything to do with what he then said to me. He was sitting in my car and my daddy said to me, I got your letter. I didn't know what to say. And in that moment, I forgave my father because he is a human being.
Right, right.
When you get a divorce, when your marriage doesn't work out, or when you produce a child and it doesn't work out, I don't think that anybody wants it to not work out. I don't think anybody wants to be away from their kid. But when 1 week turns into a month, mm-hmm. that month turns into 6 months, right. turns into a year, then you're embarrassed.
Yeah.
Well, then you're embarrassed. Yeah, and I knew that. Because I was very connected with my dad, even though he didn't raise me. So it's really not about, we can't set rules as to how you fix it, meaning, well, the man needs to say this. Those fathers are damaged men, too. My father was damaged.
Well, you said we can't fix rules. I agree with you. But in order to fix something, in order to fix the engine, you got to go by some guidelines.
You're not going to be able to make every man come apologize to their sons. They're not going to.
That's my point. Okay, just a second. I want to talk to Bravo for a second because I'm going to be leading a discussion.
about this very, very, very case, downtown Dallas in March. And I'm trying to find the right words for this. Your father still might not be man enough to tell you why he didn't
absolutely
want to be a father. Oh, absolutely. Right. But I'm asking you to be man enough to go to him and ask anyway.
Yep.
And the reason, I'm going to let you talk, but I want you to do that because at 10 years old, I called my father, looked him up in the phone book, and said, hey, man, I just want to let you know.
You old. You said phone book.
That's what it was. Yeah. I looked him up in the phone book and said, hey, man, I just want to let you know. You know, I know you and my mom didn't work it out or whatever, but I'm 10 years old now. I got good grades. You know, I just thought you wanted to know that. He said, why are you bothering me? Why are you trying to come into my life like this? You know, I've moved on. You know, I'd never even told my mom until after he was almost dead that happened. That's the only reason that when I met him at 18, I didn't ask the question because by then I didn't give a damn.
Yeah.
And I had pretty much given up on a relationship because I was not going to allow him to hurt me again.
Yeah.
But it looks like you and your father are at a much better place. And for any brothers that are listening, I ask you, I'm pleading with you to go and ask your father whether he has the right answer or not. Say, hey, man, just tell me what happened and why didn't you be a part of my life? And if you just open that dialogue, he might be able to get something off his chest. He's been holding on for 30 years.
Absolutely.
And so that's why I gave myself a task. I said, okay, this has been on my heart for so long to write this book. And I said, so once I'm done with the interviews and talking to everybody, I said at the end of it, I'll end up with a conversation with my father just to hold myself accountable of it. Right. Because I said, I know what needs to be done. I've been knowing for years. And I guess I wanted him to fight for me so hard. And always been rejected for 30 years, basically. Yeah. It's like, you know, I still wanted that. And so, and since I didn't get it, I was like, the hell with it. If God put this on my heart, write the damn book. And you know what? End it with that. If the damn dude don't feel where I'm coming from then, I'll leave it alone.
Okay, I'm asking you a question. Have you forgiven him for not being a part of your life yet?
I just did recently. Like, it was hard.
Tell me about that.
It was, so basically, it was like, you know, because my mother loved him so much. Mm-hmm. So, and I hated him for it because I'm like, you got her hurting.
Whoa. Your mother loved you or your mother loved him?
Him.
Okay.
Well, as me as well.
I wanted to clarify because I couldn't tell what you said.
So it's like, I see that with a lot of women. They hold on to the man. And the man already know, you ain't going to go nowhere, so I'm going to live my life the way I want to. And so with that, I understood it because I did that to women. Mm-hmm. I was being just like the dude. And so I was like, you know, I don't want to be the dude, but I see every day, everything he do is just everything. And so it's like, it got to a point when I was 27, I was like, you know what? I'm becoming the very man that I'm saying I hate. And I think me holding on to him so much is like, that's what's destroying me with my relationships, with everything, you know? And so I said, I'm going to forgive him, and I let it go. But recently, when I started writing this book, the shit surfs up again. So part of me, like, it probably didn't let it go, you know, talking to you right now. Because it's like, part of me still like, damn, dude, you still on me. Like, man, I took all kind of risks in my life to make you proud, and you still don't give a fuck about me. And so that's what it falls back to. And I want to piggyback back onto the social media that y'all was talking about that is poison. I used to think that as well. I don't believe that anymore. Only because like you say, we need to communicate. But social media is the outlet for a lot of people. Like, people don't have no, they can't talk to their fathers. Right. They're not talking. Facebook, all those ears that's listening, shit, somebody listening, somebody going to respond.
Absolutely.
So kids like,
and I actually have good advice.
Exactly. And someone's out there being a father to a lot of these other people's kids because these kids need a ear to listen to them. And so social media is the outlet. And it's also a cry for attention. That's why they're showing half naked asses on Instagram, titties on Snapchat, because they know it's going to disappear. Like, this is just a cry for attention and for someone to listen. So I don't think social media is actually bad. I think it's actually a gateway for people to actually express themselves. And somebody like Victor will be like, hey, man, let me touch on and talk to this dude, you know? Let me see. Al, like, hey, bro, I've been through that same shit. Let me come talk to you. So I didn't have that shit growing up. You know, I didn't get Facebook until I was a freshman in college in 05. So I was like, I didn't talk to my brothers. We was aggressive. Like, we not soft. We didn't grow up soft in my household. So it's like, all the people I could talk to was women. Then I was too afraid that they would leave because I still got some mommy issues that they would leave me if I open up too much. So I'm closed off so much. So I'm basically almost fucked up. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, you know.
You ain't almost fucked up. You fucked up. And you fucked up with everybody else. Yeah, exactly. Everybody is.
Exactly. So it's like, we all got our own shit. So, but to me, I'm willing to acknowledge it and accept it and work towards being better. Go. And so I think we all must hold ourselves accountable and be aware, grow our awareness of like, what is our issues, and be willing to embrace it, because I know everything that's wrong with me. You know, I know how to fix it, but it's that taking action to move towards the fixing it. So I'm very grateful that I met Victor. I'm going to shake his hand right now, because that's the ideal father, like my brother is back in New Orleans. It's just, oh, my fault.
No, it ain't. No, no, no. I didn't ring the bell to stop you. I rang the bell because this is what I wanted.
Okay,
this
okay,
is
cool,
the
cool.
connection.
I'm learning from all of you.
Right, but this is what I wanted for men to get together, because we are basically here. I'm sitting here with a dude, and he's saying how he learned to, he part of his parenting was, his parenting game was stepped up because he watched 16 and Pregnant.
And see,
that's a foreign concept to me, because one, I'm not watching 16 and Pregnant, and then two, I assume that men understand what other men do. Whether they do it or not,
no,
I assume
we
that
don't,
men.
We don't communicate.
Wait a minute! Well. So y'all don't know the game in the streets.
Well, we know
everybody freelancing.
No, we're not from the streets.
Well, I understand you.
We're not from the streets.
But you ain't got no friends from the streets. You ain't heard no conversation.
Look, but think about what we talk about.
What does that mean?
We don't talk about.
You know exactly what that means. Don't you play crazy with me?
That needs to be talked about. That's what we saying. We don't talk about the shit that's really deep that's bothering us because we hold.
No. I understand that part of it. What I'm saying is, in terms of him raising his daughters, because you are the good guy, because you wear the cape and you do those things. I'm not saying it like it's a bad thing. I can't give you nothing you don't want. I've been called a bitch so many times, and it don't even matter. It don't stick.
I'm the most broken out of everybody in here. I'm the most broken.
You're just a different kind of broken. Everybody's broken. It's just a different kind. What I'm asking is from a girl perspective, because I can guarantee you that women as a group think that men as a group know the game.
No.
And even if you don't recognize.
What game?
What game?
See, YouTube.
Which game? No, there's a dope game.
What I mean. Let's get to this.
Get the woman to pay your bills game.
Yeah. Hey,
you
know,
hey, they got dudes out here doing that shit.
Listen, this is what I mean.
I'm like good times. I'm scratching and surviving.
This is what I mean. I think that.
I'm trying to figure it out.
I feel like there's a system. Like I think I said it last week on the show. I feel like they're just like racism. With racism, it is structural. It is just a system that is in place. It doesn't mean that every white person is racist, but every white person may not even know that it's there. They may just think that this is how life is and it's no big deal. But there is a system that runs down anybody that ain't pretty much a white man.
I agree.
So you
as a woman,
you going off guy code. So what were you saying?
As a woman, I feel like me. I'm talking about.
What we talking about?
Coach raised no kids.
But no, it's like
No. But I'm not saying that there's a guy code when you are raising your children. What I'm saying is, do you not teach your girls that there is a guy code?
I teach my girls really simple. And you know, when I meet
you, don't tell your daughter that somebody trying to talk about their draws.
No,
them savages out there.
At some point, he has to. Maybe when they're in that early adolescent ages, he addressed it. But it's up to their mother.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Hold on.
I
will tell you what I told my. She was 22, 21 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She brought her boyfriend by. And
stare at him?
No. I told him really simple. I said, look. Whatever you do to her, I'm gonna do to you.
See,
And I said, look, if you try to impregnate her, I'm gonna try to impregnate you.
Okay, wait a minute, no. Well, did it work?
It worked.
There you go. It's not terrible.
It worked.
But don't
whatever you do to her.
Okay, but well, hang on.
And then watch this here.
But what do you do when you get a dude that don't care?
But I'm gonna show you what. Because see, my daughter, my oldest, she knows me, and she had already prepped him. Already told him my daddy gonna say this and this and this. And when I saw the game they was running, I told him, I said, let me tell you something, son. I'm one of these dudes just walking around here that I'm unstable and I'm supposed to be on medication and I refuse to take it. I said, I will drive up on you in my car, throw you in my trunk, and drive till I run out of gas.
Oh my God!
Why you didn't come get me? I got a bird. I got a bird, and I be telling my I got a bird under my horse.
And so when I said when I established the
crazy
of how this was gonna be,
you established the crazy.
When I established how far I was willing
to
go,
no medication. He ain't took me.
I refused to take my medication.
And I know, but I'm saying, so do you not sit down and explain to
your daughters know, and they know. So what they try to do. Because initially when they were in high school, my standard was bring somebody here that has good grades. Because I kind of felt like that. And that's what I knew.
Well, first of all, they kind of learn it anyway because they're in the household with you.
Right.
But I'm saying in terms of when you deal with your daughters, and I don't think mothers do this because a lot of times mothers and daughters have a thing going.
Almost definitely.
Yeah. Fathers have to teach daughters about men. When we were saying earlier about you fix the family first, you can't fix the family first because the black man, generally speaking, is not in the family. And if he is in the family, because I don't think every black man is just wilding out crazy, but if he is in the family and he's trying to do the right thing, sometimes you guys just have not been given the tools to do the right
it's
thing.
All about tools.
So yeah. When you, as a man, have a daughter, you explain to your daughter, hey, this is what this dude is doing. My dad didn't raise me, but you know what I used to tell people when I was like 19, I was in the military, and when I would go hang out, guys, this old dude I remember walked over to me talking to me, and I looked at him, and I go, my daddy told me old men give you worms. And when he tried to figure out what the hell I said, I walked away. Because I instinctively knew to get away from him, because I also instinctively knew I'm 19 in a club, and this old man is talking to me. And today I got squirrel tails for eyebrows. I'm a young chick. This dude shouldn't have any interest in me, so I instinctively knew to run from him. But I will tell, and I have told men, because I understand that men respect other men. Last week I talked about how the women that are generally gotten are unprotected by men. If my daddy wasn't there, my uncles did things, but I knew to pretend like I was protected. And not even to, I never could articulate it, but I knew to tell dudes. Mm-hmm. You know what my daddy told me? And I'd say whatever I thought my daddy might have said to me.
But see, you're a very self-aware female. Most women
right.
are not.
But that's, right. But that's why I'm saying, I'm asking, so when you have daughters, do you not tell your daughters, hey, you know what? Dudes is going to say whatever they're going to say.
You better.
All right,
that's what I'm saying.
I have four daughters. I tell mine.
I have a daughter, and I've told her precept on precept. She's 21 now. She has a child. She got pregnant when she got out of high school. I told her A, B, C, D, everything about young dudes, what they're going to be doing when you approach them, when you date them. But she still went left field. Because the fact that me and her mother was not together, she didn't want. So she got ended up getting pregnant by her boyfriend, and she was telling her mother that she didn't want her relationship with him to be end up like my relationship with her mother. So.
That's why I started watching 16 and Pregnant.
That's what I'm saying. And
I'm over you in 16 and Pregnant.
On 16 and Pregnant, you be learning all kinds. That's the thing I learned. Because, see, at that young age, that's how them girls, that's how they think. That's why they go ahead and they have these babies because they keep the babies and they hang on to the babies and they're trying to make these relationships work. So you know.
Well, but you know what? As a woman, that comes from reading fairy tales to your daughter.
You know what
if you get your daughter some Bob the Builder shit and let her do these things instead of teaching her that, oh, you know what? You get married and some man is going to save you and some this. When she starts talking about, you have conversations with her because when girls start to form these opinions, you got to get in their head before that stuff is.
I told my 17 year old, I said, look, this is how this is going to work. If you get pregnant, I said that you're going to have three choices. You have two or three choices. Or I forget the number. I said, number one, if you say to me, daddy, I want to have the baby. I said, you know what? I'm going to give you $1,000 and you got to get out. Well, I said, you can't have an abortion because see, then that's the easy route. Or you're going to have the baby and then give the baby up for adoption.
Why do you think abortion is easy?
Because then what it does is that now
there's an out.
The scapegoat.
There's an out.
Completely disagree.
And that's fair. But what I'm saying is that to me, and so you know what my daughter said to me? She said, daddy, you mean to tell me you would make me have the baby and to give the baby up for adoption? Hell yeah, I will. So for me, it is, I think that.
You play the Jedi mind trick on your kid.
Hey, look, call it what you want.
I'm not saying that it's a bad thing, because I think that that's what you should do to children.
Because see, now they understand my position. If you want to go do it your way, and that's fair, I get that. I'm not going to, but if you want me to help you, you're going to have to get a kid up for adoption and then let somebody else raise, because you are not financially in a position to raise a kid.
So at any point, because again, this goes back to the conversation I had with my mother yesterday. I'm not going to escape this stupid conversation. So do you all, do as parents, fathers, whatever, do y'all not talk about y'all kids? Do y'all not want to put them on the pill? And let me tell you why I'm asking, because the conversation that
damn.
I, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, I think the thing is nothing. Yeah, it's whatever they want to do.
Damn, they need to protect themselves, see, seriously.
Yeah.
Huh? All right,
just let me. I said they need to protect themselves other than the pill.
Right. But the reason I asked that is because I was having a conversation with my mother yesterday, and my mom, over several conversations over lots of years, she told me she thought I was having sex at 17 with the dude that's 5'9". And I was like, Mom, if you thought I was having sex, why didn't you say something to me? Why didn't you talk to me about birth control, blah, blah, and just. We finally, it came to a head yesterday because we were talking and we just kind of rolled into that conversation. So whenever she would say something, I go, Mom, that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
She went brought up the
right, but you know what she finally said after like 45 minutes of conversation? She was like, well, you want the truth? Well, why we been on the phone for 45 minutes? Yeah, I want the truth. My mother said, as long as you are in my house, I would never go put you on the pill, because to me, that makes me feel like if you out there being fast, that I'm encouraging you.
Yeah, she's signing off.
Amazing. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But check this out, though.
But that was old.
Yeah, it's old.
My mom sent me something, so she was the same way with my sister. So yeah.
I was floored. Right,
check this out. This is from the student formula, How to Win in Inner City Classrooms. This is my latest book.
Hang on. Okay, because I was going to say, plug the book.
This is from chapter 5, Mentoring Parents. And this is, even though I don't have daughters, this is what I wrote to men who have daughters. Did you know that daughters get their ideas from what real men are and how real men acts from their fathers? When a father isn't there to display what a real man is, our girls are forced to seek that from other men. That's it. So, Anthony, again, hats off to you. I don't have daughters. If I did, I would have been reading from that same hymnal saying, hey, y'all, this is how we're going to do this.
Hey.
You know, if you F up that bad, then it's not going to be good for you. And it put that kind of fear into them, where the next time...
And get them young enough before they can reason. Because the thing is... No, seriously, that's what you do to kids. If you trick kids when they're like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, then it's just their reality.
They have to think their daddy's crazy.
Yeah.
They'll take any impression you put on them because they're so innocent.
Right.
But I do got a question, Anthony, right? Do you still think social media and reality TV is bad because you learned a vital lesson from 16 and pregnant?
I think that... I'm going to say yes. I think it's bad. I think social media is bad if we don't understand the power of social media. Mm-hmm. If I don't understand the power of it, it's kind of like a gun. A gun is bad if I don't understand the power of it. If I understand the power of it, I know how to handle it, host it, and use it, then now it's a tool for protection. And so I think that what that show forced me to do was it threw something in my face and said, look, Anthony, look, you on some bullshit. You raising these kids like they this and this. You on some straight bullshit.
You're the Cleavers.
And so when I started waking up and understanding that on my best day would help, that I could not outsmart my daughters. Because they are given the natural ability to outthink me, I had to go to the source. I had to go where they, so I had to see the blueprint. I had to see it in action because I wasn't taught this way.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until, but I think that we're parents, I don't leave, my kids have access to the social media, but what I do is I have straight conversation with them. Even when I mess up and even when I make mistakes, I'm like, look, I messed up.
So you upped your game, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, without it, you wouldn't have never upped
exactly.
your game.
Exactly. So
it's a blessing in disguise as well.
So it is. But I think that we have to learn how to harness that power. and now have that conversation. Because I mean, and I'm gonna tell you, as far as my daughters, I mean, I don't believe, like, when my, I got this thing really early with my daughters, because when they were like 3 and 4 years old, I mean, I stopped spanking them. I don't believe in, I don't think a man should hit on it, discipline the girls.
No.
Because it sends a message that it's, if cool, daddy whooped me, it's okay now for another man to hit me. So what I did was, I for the longest, they will tell you, my dad didn't discipline me. But I promise you.
That lecture.
The way I disciplined them, they would wish I, they would, daddy, please just whoop me. No, I'm going to put my hands on you.
My sons, they play, I'd rather get a whipping than a lecture. Please, just wait till I get over there. I got to sit here in your mouth for the next 20 minutes.
Okay, I have a question. I knew when we started this, this is going to be more than one show. Everybody game to come back?
That's whatever. I'm about it.
Yep. But I'm telling you, one thing is, a lot of your listeners are probably going to be bothered, though, that we didn't really, so maybe this is what the next section will be about, is the relationships.
Yeah.
With women, because that is
right. Well, no. And I want to do that. But what I didn't want to do was do that now, because I wanted to address the insecurities, because a lot of times,
yeah, that's a whole show.
Right. Yeah. But I wanted to address that so that women that hear this understand, you know what, if your dude is kind of doing this, maybe it's not that he's just a bad dude. Maybe he may be an asshole, but maybe he's an asshole because of X.
Yeah, he had to figure it out.
Maybe he doesn't feel, for whatever reason, he doesn't feel comfortable enough to say what it is. You know, because it may not be the woman. I'm the chick anyway. You can talk to me about whatever. I don't care what it is, and I'll listen. Let me say
this. A lot of times, you know, men not going to just give out information.
Absolutely not.
You know, it takes some shit like this.
It takes, exactly. I mean, it actually takes.
Which is why I did this, because also when you are talking to someone, you may not feel comfortable saying whatever to them. But if somebody listens to this and they go, you know what, I was listening to this podcast called Bree TV, but it's on the radio and I don't know why that is, but they said, and then you start the dialogue. That's what I wanted to do, was start the dialogue, and then we move forward, because everybody in the room is diverse. Nobody has the same story.
Right.
You know, nobody has the same story. And that's the whole point of starting the conversation. And after this show is basically to kind of establish a baseline, because to figure out who's where everybody is, and to kind of get so that when we do the next show, everybody's comfortable with everyone else. You don't have to come in and do that 30 minutes of laying the groundwork and figuring out what's what. And now we know. And like, you about, need to talk more.
And what I like about this is that, because there's different people that are going to connect. See, I don't know who's going to connect with me.
Right.
And you don't know who's going to connect with.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I think that that's kind of like, if we just go free flow.
Yeah, which is why I did it.
I like it. Because at first I was kind of like,
you wanted structure.
I wanted structure.
I could tell.
But then, okay, where are we going?
I could tell.
And so I think that one thing to kind of jump off topic, I really kind of like your story, Bravo, about, you know, your relationship with your dad, mm-hmm. and kind of like how you said that the way your relationship is structured with him now is that you kind of almost, you subconsciously hurt him because he hurts you.
Yeah.
And I think that the most powerful thing, because see, sometimes I think we can go too deep and all this other kind of bullshit. I think that when you do, I would encourage you that when you do get ready, I think the simple thing that you say to him is, you know what, you hurt me.
Well, yeah.
And hurt people?
Yeah.
Hurt right. people.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you hurt
and
me.
And I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then at that point, I just stop. And then just let him fill in the blanks. Because see, now, when you tell me, if I'm sensitive, unlike
Victor's
dad, which seems like he's just ass.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, what you calling me for? Yeah. I was like, dude, it's like
Victor's daddy hit the skins and bounced.
So that way, you kind of know what you're dealing with, because that way, because if you go too deep and you put too much into it, then only thing it does, I think personally, is that it sets you back further.
Oh, totally.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay, hang on, because we have not taken a single break.
You ain't lying.
Except for the initial one, which was fine. I kind of stressed a little bit today about music that I wanted to play, and I don't know why I cared. We are going to sit here for just a second, but I want to go ahead and let my engineer get us out of here. Hang on. You got it? Okay. Listen up. Bree TV, every Wednesday night on the After Party, the B-side, 6 to 8 p.m. podcast, Bree-TV. Facebook Live, Bree_TV. You can look for me at Bree.TV.2016. Post questions, comments, and we will see you on the radio next week.
You know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins. I can't tell where mine is. Brown skin up against my brown skin. Need some every now and then. People from maybe Mississippi or an island. Apparently your skin has been kissed by the sun. You make me want a Hershey's kiss, your licorice. Every time I see your lips, it makes me think of honey coated chocolate. Your kisses are worth more than gold to me. I'll be your almond joy, you'll be my sugar daddy. Brown skin, you know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins. I can't tell where mine is. Brown skin, up against my brown skin. Need some every now and then. Come around, something magnetic pulls me and I can't get out. Disoriented, I can't tell my up from down. All I know is that I wanna lay you down. Every time I lay you in, abracadabra magic happens as we swim higher and higher. Finally we reach heaven. Come back to earth. Brown skin, you know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins. I can't tell where mine is. Brown skin, up against my brown skin. Need some every now and then. So brown, lips so round, baby, how can I be down? Beautiful mahogany, you make me feel like a queen.
You make me feel like a queen.
Tell me what's that thing you do that makes me wanna get next to you, yeah. Brown skin.